This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Happy holidays. We're going to be dipping into the Science Friday vaults this hour. Coming up, Science Friday's first ever science movie quiz. So see if you can beat our expert guests. But first, a conversation about geology and plate tectonics with author John McPhee. This was recorded way back in 1993.
Last May, a few days after we aired a program on paradigm shifts in science, this letter arrived in our office. Let me read it to you. It says, "Dear Mr. Flatow, during your admirable programs today about theories of science, I was amazed that no one brought up the revolutionary theory of plate tectonics. In truth, no contemporary scientific theory has brought more poetry along with it or has such a detailed aesthetic dimension. Merely to dwell on the astonishing metamorphoses and orogenies that have affected our continent is to stretch one's imagination to the limit. Let me suggest a program on this topic featuring John McPhee, who has written on it with much feeling and elaboration. Sincerely yours, Robert Flint, Cambridge, Massachusetts." Well, we liked Robert Flint's idea for a future show, so we hung on to his letter, and as they used to say on TV, you asked for it. "One of my favorite places to look at the geology of the land around us are road cuts, you know, where the highway goes through the roads, where they've dynamited or drilled away and have exposed the hidden rock. These are also the favorite places for writer John McPhee." He says, "The rock beside the trail was granite, poetically weathered, organic billows of granite. There were small black shapes within it, like raisins, thousands of them, alien pebbles," he writes in his new book. That's a short sample from John McPhee's book about geology and geologists called Assembling California. He has written three other books on the subject of geology. John McPhee also is a staff writer at The New Yorker, and he joins me now in our studio here in New York. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Joining us by phone is a man who figures prominently in Assembling California, geologist Eldridge Moores, who over the course of 15 years guided John McPhee on geological field trips around California. Eldridge Moores has been teaching geology and tectonics at the University of California at Davis since 1966. He also was on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
And I just want to begin our conversation with one quote from the book. You write, if I had to restrict all of this writing to one sentence, this is still the one I would choose. The summit of Mount Everest is marine limestone. John McPhee, why is that so important?
Well, think what had to happen to put rock formed at the bottom of an ocean and below the bottom of an ocean, 50,000 feet up. That's about how far the minimum it would have had to travel to get where it is now. Mm-hmm. And that implies a rather spectacular movement of the Earth's crust that would produce the Himalaya. And so if you were looking for one single example of an event that spoke for the rest of it, that might be it.
And it gives us an image of a world constantly in motion, and your book certainly talks about that.
Like a rumbling freight, just constantly moving, all the plates and so forth. An idea that's not so evident on the human scale, but on the geologic scale, it's a matter of fairly constant motion.
What do you find so fascinating about geology?
Well, it's the planet we live on. It's the only home we'll ever have. And to know how it works is to know where you were, where you are, something like that. I've always been interested in the outdoors and in mountains and rivers and everything else. And all of that, I'm sure, is what drew me toward geology and ultimately to it.
Mm-hmm. Eldridge Moores, is it possible to understand how the Earth works?
Yes, I think it's possible to understand how the Earth works. You can get a good idea at least how the surface of the Earth responds to the internal forces and the internal processes. We're having a bit of a harder time understanding precisely what is the pattern of movements within the Earth that give rise to the surface movements that we see. In addition, it's hard, as we move back in time, it's harder to figure out what the movements have been because the record becomes more obscure.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically one of the most fascinating parts of the book, is to describe how you find different places of the Earth where you don't expect to find them.
Yeah, that's the thing that really excites me about geology, among other things, is the sort of detective aspect of the exercise.
Mm-hmm. John McPhee, your title of the book is called Assembling California. And it's a great title because I think most people figure that California just was put there someday, and and don't realize it was actually assembled from little pieces.
Well, given the insights of plate tectonics, in which parts of the Earth are moving with respect to other parts, if they're in collision, mountains rise, and if they're separating, an ocean may form. And if they're sliding past each other, you have a situation like the San Andreas Fault, where one piece of California is sort of sliding past another, occluding it like a screen. Over time, this results in colossal shifts of landscape, of the scenery, of the face of the world. And in the Paleozoic, somewhere back there, 300 or 400 million years, there was the coastline of North America was sort of where Salt Lake City is now.
There was water lapping up,
and blue ocean lay west of that.
Uh-huh.
And what we have west of Salt Lake City is a gradual accretion of terrains that. What remains of them is what is that last stretch of the continent to the Pacific, the present Pacific coast.
In other words, there was land that just kept coming from the water toward Nevada or Utah.
That's the idea.
And it piled up over millions and millions of years?
Since the Jurassic, Eldridge, when was the first collision?
Eldridge Moore?
Yeah, about 350 million years ago.
In the Paleozoic.
In the Paleozoic. Yeah.
So help me out here, Dr. Moore. In other words, there's this water in Nevada, on the coast of Nevada, and land is moving toward it all the time.
It was at that time, or it was moving towards some other kind of a trench, like off of Japan or off of Peru and Chile. Anyway, the two things were moving towards each other. That's right, at a slow rate, about the rate of a fingernail growing.
A very good example we have is Indonesia, north of Australia.
Right.
Australia is part of the Australian plate is a great big plate that includes India. But the Australian plate is moving northward, and it is plowing under the Eurasian plate, and there's a bunch of intervening little microplates there and so on. But at all events, it is island arcs like Indonesia and so forth are evidently about to accrue to Australia. And if you were to think of Australia as the North American continent and as Indonesia and everything else as what was off in the Pacific Ocean at one time, you have a picture of what it was probably like in the Mesozoic, you see. Mm-hmm. You'd have to turn Australia on its side to make it very clear. But that's the idea. Take all those Indonesian islands and crunch them up into Australia, and you'll get a notion of it.
And basically, plate tectonics talks about plates that are like, it's been described in various ways, that the Earth's crust is like a fractured eggshell. And these shells each make up little plates, and the plates dive down below each other or slide against each other. And in described in the book, as the plates dive below, they sort of scrape off the ocean floor. And they sort of scraped off and help create mountains of what's left over. Would that be correct?
Eldridge is the professor. He can give you a grade on that.
Yeah. In a sense, that's true.
And that's how you get the ocean floor on the top of a mountain. It's scraped off.
That's part of it. Yeah. Or you the plate that's going down carries a continent, like in Australia, and the plate goes down till the continent hits the edge or the consuming margin where things are, and then part of the overriding plate gets in place, as has happened in northern New Guinea.
And this has been happening for hundreds of millions of years, so the continents have been changing their shapes and sizes and places.
That's precisely right.
Right.
The continents, if you had got in a time machine and went back in time, say, 500 million years ago, things would look a lot different from what they look like today.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, before we get into the history, for example, in your book, you say, southeastern Staten Island is a piece of Europe glued to ophiolite from the northwest Iapetus floor. Nova Scotia is European, and so is southeastern Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. Boston is African. Mm-hmm. The north of Ireland is American. The northwest highlands of Scotland are American, so is much of Norway. Mm-hmm. How do you know where these places came from?
Well, first let me say that how it came to be that way, that there was an ocean or oceans where the Atlantic is now, possibly larger than the Atlantic. And that ocean, which geologists call Iapetus, closed and kept on closing, crunched island arcs together, and eventually completely closed over.
So Europe and North America.
Europe and North America, touched. In effect, what is now Europe and North America, hit each other, and in that action made the Appalachian Mountain chain. That sat there for several hundred million years, and then it started to pull itself apart. And mm-hmm. when it pulled itself apart, it made the Atlantic Ocean. Uh-huh. And it's in the pulling itself apart that pieces of uh-huh. the old uh-huh. Europe and America ended up on the two sides of the present ocean.
And when these land masses collide, they push up mountains. You describe in the book how India started out, I think if I remember correctly, near Australia.
And Antarctica, too.
And Antarctica. Yeah. And as that little subcontinent moved upwards, it mm-hmm. banged into Asia,
right?
And pushed up the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm.
And you raise a very interesting question. Well, there's nothing that is banged into the coast of California. How did the Rockies get pushed up? And you also answer it by pointing to the map north of California.
There's a great deal of speculation in that, but what I was saying, I mean, I'm not a geologist, remember, so I'm free to speculate, was that Alaska is a great amalgam of pieces of terrains that went sliding in there and mm-hmm. bonded themselves together. Where did they come from? Well, maybe they came across, hit North America, and then slid up on transform faults like the San Andreas, which Eldridge says is a reasonable picture.
So I
will not speak for you, Eldridge. What do you say?
Eldridge Moores, you going to defend yourself here?
Yeah, I think that is a reasonable picture. It's not an uncontroversial one, but a number of people have suggested that pieces of what we now see as southern Alaska and western British Columbia, when they banged into the continent, they were down off of what we now would see as San Francisco or this general latitude.
And they slowly moved up the coast.
Slowly moved up the coast, right.
Hmm.
This is Science Friday, and I'm Ira Flatow. We're revisiting a classic interview this hour with author John McPhee and geologist Eldridge Moores, recorded back in 1993.
My guest this hour is John McPhee, who is author of the new book, Assembling California, and one of the geologists mentioned in the book, Eldridge Moores. It seems like a key point in your book, and for both of you, is the finding of the ocean floor, and we mentioned about on top of Mount Everest, is that the finding of what appears to be similar pieces of ocean floor all over the world. And I remember we talked about road cuts. You could be driving in Greece, if I remember, or you could be driving in California or Nevada or any place, and you could see similar sort of rock there and say to yourself, how did they get here?
That's right.
And that would tell you that then plate tectonics must be at work because we're seeing, again, the ocean being scraped off and deposited almost identical in these different places.
Yeah, the thing that you see deposited in these regions are chunks of the ocean crust and the layer of the earth below that, the mantle, that seems to have been formed at spreading centers, and it's those chunks that are present on the continents, and that tells you that there, at some time in the past, was some sort of ocean with a spreading center in it that's now preserved.
Your trip takes you in the book. There's an interesting journey you take on Route I-80. From where to where are you going in the book?
My idea was to traverse the North American continent at about that latitude, and this,
which latitude of I-80?
Well, roughly.
Where
about
is
the 40th parallel? It's the level of New York, San Francisco, New York to San Francisco. Uh-huh. I-80 runs from New York to San Francisco. San Francisco is a little south of the 40th parallel, but for government work, it'll do. And the notion was to traverse the continent and to try to see what the continent was made of in the company of various geologists. And, of course, California is where things are really happening, and that's why it concludes there. Uh-huh. And in California, the structure is that of the piece of writing is just that it actually starts at the Pacific and then flashes back to the state, to Reno area, the state line, and then it crosses the Sierra Nevada, and it digresses to Cyprus and to Greece, because those are places where Eldridge has done very significant work on rock that is closely related in nature and in story to the rock mm-hmm. of California they were looking at. And eventually, when it comes into the coast ranges, the Napa Valley and so forth, of course, the subject of the San Andreas Fault or San Andreas family of faults, there's literally hundreds of them in the system comes up, and then the story kind of stretches north and considerably south as the trace of the San Andreas is followed.
Let's go to the phone. Some folks want to talk to us. And we're going to get into the history of plate tectonics, and maybe we can start with this first phone call from Lee in Orange, New Jersey. Go ahead, Lee.
Hi. I've never heard anybody give credit to the first person that I know of to suggest the theory that's now called plate tectonics, who is Benjamin Franklin. He spent a good deal of time in England at one point in his life and did a lot of naturalizing and going about and looking at the natural world, and he noticed that he found fossils of trees and ferns and other terrestrial plants in a coal mine, which was now below sea level. Well, a few miles away, there were fossil clam shells on top of a mountain, and he said, how is this possible to get them so close together, of the trees going down and the clam shells going up? And unfortunately, I don't remember it word for word, but he said, I conceive the interior of the earth to be a fluid more dense than any of the solids with which we are created, and that currents in this fluid caused the continents basically to go wandering about and smashing into each other, which is the theory of plate tectonics, essentially.
Amazing. If that's true, you're right. No one has...
It leads to the theory of plate tectonics. It isn't in sum the theory of plate tectonics. Yeah. I'll tell you an odd thing. I had that quote on my wall for a long time.
Where is it
time.
From? Do you know where
it's
from?
No, I don't. I mean, I did
no
once,
reference,
but I cut it out and put it up there. I intended to work it into the piece, and I didn't.
It's from one of his letters. I read it quoted in a biography. Unfortunately, I haven't got that biography with me.
All right. Thanks, Lee, for sharing that with us. Eldridge Moore, as you talk about in the book, how relatively new and difficult it has been for plate tectonics to be accepted. Why is that?
Well, I think that a lot of people, first of all, people who grew up in the older sort of view, which was more stability and continents and oceans being permanent, a lot of people had trouble making the switch to this new sort of way of looking at things.
What was the old way of looking at it?
It was called the geosynclinal theory, where somehow big deep troughs would form and sediments would be piled in these things, and then at some point things would in a sense revert, and the stuff that had gone down would come back up and be folded up as mountains and things like that. We didn't quite understand what went on, but the idea was that continents were fixed and the oceans were very old, and it took some while for people to come around to this new view. Science is got a lot of emotion attached to it as well. You know, you get emotionally attached to your ideas, and sometimes it's hard to give them up.
Mm-hmm. And when would you put the landmark for its acceptance coming?
The landmark, I think, was in the late 60s. The first papers that were published were in 1960, then 1963. By 1966, people more or less accepted the idea that the oceans were young and that there was spreading in the oceans. By the first formulation of plate tectonics was 68. And majority of people accepted it, I would say, within a few years after that. I have to say, though, that there are a number of people who still don't accept it. In fact, you still see publications that talk about the problems of the plate tectonic ideas.
Let's go now to Robert in Olympia, Washington. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi. If the earthquakes and volcanoes occur along the edges of plates, and there's earthquakes along the Mississippi and the St. Lawrence, and there's volcanic activity at Lake Superior, why isn't the eastern United States different plate than the western United States? Good. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you. Good question. Why are there volcanic action where it doesn't appear to be any plate there? Let me ask Eldridge Moore.
Well, there's not much in the way of volcanic action in the interior of the plates. The plate theory is a model that approximates what you actually see in the Earth, and you can say that that something like 80-90% of all the earthquakes which occur are along the boundaries that we define as plate boundaries. But surely there are earthquakes that are in the interiors of plates. They're just not as abundant, and they don't happen as often.
Could there be a plate you just don't see?
There There could be plate boundaries that you don't see. The principal place that people have talked about that is between West and East Antarctica, which is covered by ice. Mm-hmm. But they might be two pieces that are moving at different rates.
How do you actually see the boundary? I mean, do you drill? Do you look by an airplane photograph, satellite? How do you see the boundary itself?
Well, what you see are the geologic or topographic or manifestations. You see earthquakes along them. You see volcanoes. You see topographic features that are reflective of boundaries elsewhere.
I mean, you see,
and you also work out the magnetic record that you have in the oceans. You work out the history of motion of pieces, and it's that motion history and differentiation from one place to the other would define one plate or another.
Mm-hmm. Bud in Norfolk, Virginia. Welcome.
Hi. I know that there is oil under the Arctic slope. I know it wasn't formed in that cold weather. Must have been formed somewhere else and moved there. Mm-hmm. Plate tectonics explain that?
John McPhee.
Well, you mean the Arctic slope of Alaska?
Yes.
Alaska is thought to be an amalgam of driftwood from all sorts of places, pieces of terrain that weren't there, that came together, and the Brooks Range, the Arctic slope and so on, sort of, Eldridge, correct me on this, but I think it sort of swung like a hinge into its present place and was the first part of Alaska there?
That's certainly one of the reigning ideas, yeah.
Mm, there's also, yeah. Also coal was discovered in Antarctica. Yeah.
But to answer, the oil wouldn't have formed in an Arctic place. I mean, the terrain did move, but oil forms where, in a certain temperature window that's in the rock, and probably doesn't have too much to do with the winds and so on blowing around up above, if that's what's meant.
Well, another thing that you have to worry about is the fact that at the time that oil, the organic material, was deposited, the climate was really a lot different. That if you go back into the Cretaceous, 80 or 65 to 100 or so million years ago, the poles were warm. There wasn't any ice anywhere, and sea level was higher, and actually carbon dioxide percent in the atmosphere was higher too, probably.
Yes, right. Worldwide. That it's an interesting thing that ice, as in the ice ages and as right now, which is part of an ice age, has been characteristic of the Earth, of being up on continents or whatever, very, very few times.
Yeah.
John McPhee, author of Assembling California, his fourth and latest book about geology and geologists. Eldridge Moore is a geologist at the University of California at Davis and John McPhee's guide across the California landscape.
That interview was recorded back in 1993 with writer John McPhee, who had just released the book Assembling California, and Eldridge Moore is a geologist at the University of California who served as McPhee's guide through the book.